It's emotional and it's saddening. It's disappointing, all the things we've said already. But, you know, like mine is a story of a migrant family, you know, who came here in 1960. And we're glad, you know, that Mum and Dad came here and had us here, because it is one of my favourite cities on earth. To see it like that, it's emotional, and it makes you very, very sad.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are talking to one of the legends of the Melbourne food industry. His name is Guy Grossi. And before we got on this call to do the podcast, I was chatting to Guy about Cellar Bar, one of the many restaurants that he owns in Melbourne. I'm writing about Cellar Bar for this weekend's paper because it is one of my favourite places in town. It's somewhere that I really hankered to go to when Melbourne came out of lockdowns 1, 2, and 3. And I'm definitely going back there when we come out of lockdown number 4. Guy, I just loved talking to you about bolognese and tiramisu and beautiful food things, but unfortunately there is a lot more on our minds at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. This lockdown fourth time is a bit of a tragedy, really, because, you know, we've got full rents we're paying plus deferred rent. There's no JobKeeper. And just the uncertainty of how long this is going to go for, especially the people that work in the businesses that are at home, not knowing what's going to happen next. And, you know, they're asking questions, but we just don't have the answers to give to them. So obviously, Danny, it's something that goes deep into our community. It's not just restaurants, it's all sorts of businesses. And, you know, think about, you know, suppliers, you know, all the great winemakers, the farmers. This affects everybody in the community.
Yeah, it really does. And I feel like, you know, we thought that perhaps these lockdowns were behind us. What was it like for you sort of seeing those cases in the community? I mean, did you think we'd be able to dodge it this time, or did you feel it coming?
Well, I felt that there was issues. It made me sad to see it happening. I just need to get my head around this whole contact tracing thing and being able to manage it, because I think moving forward we need to be able to open with confidence and have the continuity. You know, we can't have this stop-start economy going on forever. And I sort of, when the cases started growing, I was concerned. I did see it coming at that point, but I guess everybody did at that stage. It just kind of got out of control so quickly. And the great shame of it is what we were saying before, Danny, is that, you know, the momentum was building so well in Melbourne, and people just getting out and enjoying themselves and doing what they do best, you know, socialising and seeing the city come back to life, and the suburbs as well. It's not just the city. It was just so uplifting, and I was quietly confident that we were like through the worst of it and were starting to rebuild. You know, business was getting stronger and stronger. And especially as we were due to lift all our restrictions on how many, on capacities and all of that, it almost coincided perfectly to the day, you know, where we got closed down again, which is just, it just feels, you know, really disappointing and, you know, upsetting.
Yeah, it is so upsetting, and there's so many aspects to it. I mean, for yourself, Guy, like, you know, you're in it like everybody is, living in a city that's locked down. You're also, it's a family business, so there's people that, you know, are very close to you that are, you know, very affected by the family business, the impacts on the family businesses. But of course, that means that you guys are also employers. I mean, how do you sort of juggle all the many things that you must be feeling? You know, what do you make your priority?
Well, the priority is, for myself personally, I like to keep really busy. So I just find things to do, you know, menu planning, those sorts of things. But there's also the business side of things to manage, like the financial stress of all of this, where I guess I'm really lucky. I've got a lot of family that work together in the business, and we're very close. So we support each other quite a lot. We spend a lot of time, like Liz, my sister, spends a lot of time calling our team and making sure she keeps in touch with them. I think that side of things is really important, to keep in touch with them and assure them that, you know, we're still there for them and we're there, where they can reach out to us at any time. I think we need to manage that really closely. You know, I like to call my suppliers, especially the ones that I owe a fair bit of money to and we've just got shut down, and talk to them about that situation and how we're going to work our way through that situation once we do reopen. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. It's not just as simple as, you know, you turn the key, lock the door, walk away, and then, you know, come back 7 days later or 14 days later or 30 days later. We still don't know where this is going to go and where this is going to end. So that's almost the worst part of the whole thing, is that not knowing when this is going to end. You know, there's also the other side that breaks your heart, is the wastage of food. You know, when you see food being deteriorating and getting wasted, you know, we've had to clean up and pack down and get rid of a lot of things already. But, you know, 7 days is one thing. But then, you know, there's things that are going to move beyond shelf life once that 7 days goes beyond that. So, yeah, as I say, there's many moving parts and there's lots of people that are suffering. And it's not just the financial side of it. This is what we've got to get our heads around. It's also a really emotional thing for many people.
And I think we're all feeling those emotions and dealing with all the practical aspects from a position of depletion. Everybody's stores of energy are a bit run down, aren't they?
Absolutely. It's fatigue. It's fatigue. It's lockdown fatigue. And I really worry about, like, I'm lucky. I consider myself still lucky because I do have a lot of family support around me. But my heart goes out to those operators that are operating on their own, the smaller operators that, you know, may not come back from this. There's lots that haven't come back from lockdown one or lockdown two and lockdown three. But what about all these poor people that are in that position again now and just exhausted to get back up and running again? The financial burden behind it all, and just that, the motivation, like, you know, it's just an exhausting exercise to go through. You know, pack everything down, lock everything up, throw away the food, and then start again. When do you order the products? When do you start restocking? We just don't know.
So what actually are you doing? Because, I mean, some people said this time around, you know, for a 7-day lockdown, it's not worth doing takeaway. Of course, we don't exactly know if it is going to be 7 days and what it is going to be. And how do you sort of process that uncertainty and then decide what action to take?
Well, I guess it's a bit of wait and see, and we hope for the best. We're talking to, you know, as I say, all of our people. We're still doing Grossia Casa because that never got disrupted. We kept that going once we developed that through lockdown one. We just kept it going all the way through, even whilst we were open at the restaurant. So that's still been going along very well for us. So that, it's lucky that we have that and we can send some people to help, you know, with Grossia Casa from the team, and some extra people to help out there because it's gone very busy now that everything's locked down again. So we're concentrating on that, but then we also have to concentrate on the you know, fact that we really need to get open as swiftly as we possibly can. And once we can put, you know, a peg in the dirt, so to say, so that we know, you know, when this is going to end, then we can start to go into action and basically start to restock and get in and clean everything out and just start again.
That's a lot, isn't it? It's it's just a lot.
It is. It's a huge deal to get through. But you know, as I say, I still think, you know, I'm in a lucky position in that sense that I have got that support. There's a lot of other people that are not as fortunate as that, but we really need to, you know, think about how we manage this into the future, I guess, and also, you know, think about what sort of, you know, compensation that can be had. I mean, I'm a bit disappointed in what the government announced as compensation thus far. And obviously, there's no support from federal with JobKeeper at the moment. So it is a huge burden on a lot of people and a lot of businesses.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an insupportable burden, really. And I think, I don't know if anyone expected that the state government was going to come through with income support. I guess we have that is the federal government's offered that in the past. And they've got that greater tax base to draw on. But I mean, I think there's got to be income support. Businesses need it, but people need it. I mean, we know that a lot of people in hospitality and many other industries live from week to week and from paycheck to paycheck. And you can't just have zero income.
Well, that's right. That's right. And so I think that that's something that really needs to be, you know, looked at a lot more closely, because, as you say, there are people that, you know, just live week to week, and that is really hard.
In a lot of places around the world, I know it's been a big conversation in the US, people have talked about hospitality workers being towards the front of the line for vaccination. Do you have a view on that?
Well, I think vaccination is important. Obviously, everyone has to do their bit. I'm booked in to go and get mine done very soon, my first jab, and I probably should have acted sooner. But I think it's an important thing that I think the whole community needs to be, you know, vaccinated. The quicker we get that done, the better things will be, I believe. And I think hospitality workers are, you know, sort of in contact with a lot of people, especially the front of house workers, with a lot of people every day. So it would make sense, really.
Yeah, I reckon it would make sense too to open it up to anyone who's got a lot of contact with the public. I think that, taxi drivers and rideshare drivers should be at the front of the queue as well. I think one of the other things that we've seen, one of the other points of vulnerability in our community, is the QR code system and making it as easy as possible for the contact tracers to do their jobs. Have you got any, I guess, tips to businesses who have been finding it perhaps hard to manage, or are there any conversations that you've had to have with customers who are unwilling to check in? I mean, do you see any vulnerability in that area for your businesses or for the community generally?
I think with compliance, it's like any sort of compliance. The best and easiest way to do it is just to have a system in place, a plan, and just to stick to it. It's really hard when things don't get done properly all the time, because then it becomes a habit. And I think that's the biggest tip I could say, is just to make sure that you have a good system in place for it and that it just happens. So, you know, simple little things like we should all be on the VicGov on the VicGov code as well, so it's even simpler. Simple little things like just having the QR code on your menu, and, you know, when your menu goes down, if somebody's got missed at the door, you know, they should be reminded to please check in. It's just little prompts, you know, to get people to do it. We have had the odd incident where people have been, you know, grumpy about it, but, you know, it's a different world now, so it's just part of life. I think ultimately people will just understand that it's something they just have to do, and you've just got to keep pushing it, because I think that is one of the most important things, is that, you know, everybody should be just recording everywhere they walk into, because then if we do get a case, then we can go, okay, we know exactly who that person has been in contact with, and it's simple as that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's just got to become second nature. It's just got to be embedded in every time we sit down to eat, that it's just got to be done.
Yeah, look, you do it. I did it. I went to Dan Murphy yesterday and I had to do it there, and I'm happy to do it, because if that's going to help us stay open, then I'm happy to do that. When I go to the supermarket, I do it there. It just should be anywhere. It just should be anywhere, so that you can just know exactly who you've been in contact with, and at a push of a button, the contact tracers can get all that information.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So, Guy, I mean, I have my the city isn't in my 5K, and I'm not a permitted worker, so I haven't been into the city, but I mean, I know the streets are very quiet in my neighbourhood. I mean, what is it like for you to see and feel where Melbourne being back in this space again?
It's emotional and it's saddening. It's disappointing, all the things we've said already. But, you know, like mine is a story of a migrant family, you know, who came here in 1960. And my dad was a chef, as you probably know, and he was working in restaurants and hotels since that day he landed in the country. And he loved this city. And we're glad, you know, that mum and dad came here and had us here, because it is one of my favourite cities on earth. To see it like that, that it's emotional and it makes you very, very sad.
Mm. And you mentioned that you've been calling some of your suppliers. I mean, tell me what produce was coming through. What were you looking forward to cooking? What's sort of on hold at the moment?
We were getting some really, really good craze coming through. Our foragers were out with pine mushrooms right in the middle of the season for pineys. So we were doing a lot of that stuff. We got our beautiful farmer from Union Station, Adam Warrnambool, who had just delivered us a truckload of meat. So just really nice things, you know, great Aussie beef, great Aussie lamb. And truffles. Funnily enough, we managed to squeeze in our truffle dinner. It was our last supper on Thursday night. So that was good that we got that in at least. As you know, the season is just beginning now. So looking forward to doing some really nice truffle dishes.
It sucks.
It's pretty shit.
I should be used to it, I guess, but I just still have, I'm just still like a few times a day, I'm still just like, oh my God, what? Are you serious? Are we really back here again?
It's like, surreal, isn't it? It's just
hanging
surreal.
On the press conferences and the numbers and, you know, becoming an instant epidemiologist and, you know, just, it's so just, gut-wrenching.
It is. But I think the important thing is we just stay positive. There's, you know, there's the you know, things we have to get through, like all that financial stuff and all that horrible stuff, that side of it, which is, you know, there's very little we can do it. Just have to keep on battling on and fighting and hope that this thing is over really, really quick so we can get Melbourne swiftly, you know, back up to, you know, the beautiful place that it should be.
Yeah, I still believe that we can do that. We definitely can. Guy, I know that a lot of people in these times turn to beautiful things like lasagna. So let's finish this conversation by talking about something beautiful, special, comforting and delicious. Tell me about the Grossi lasagna.
Well, the Grossi lasagna started for me when I was a young child because it's the way my mother makes lasagna for us. And still today, you know, we try and keep it to the exact same recipe. The Grossi a casa lasagna and the Celebar lasagna is the same. So we start off with beautiful fresh pasta sheets, durum wheat flour, fresh eggs and a little salt. We make those up and, you know, roll those out till they're fine, nice and silky. And then, of course, the beautiful bolognese, which we start with our sofrito and make sure that's really caramelized and beautiful and tasty. Then we put in our meat. I use beef, a little bit of chicken, a little bit of pork and get that really sautéed off nice and dark and brown so it's nice and rich and develops all that beautiful depth of flavor. Tomato paste, our red wine, then our water, salt and pepper. We'll put a little nutmeg and clove in there as well and let that cook out really, really super gently, stirring it till it's nice and rich. Usually a couple of hours it takes. And the bechamel, a beautiful, rich, thick bechamel. And then we put it all together with plenty of parmigiano. I usually use a grana for that, grana padana. And then once it's all layered up, we put six layers of in a tray of lasagna. It's quite heavy by the end of it. And then bake that off in a hot oven, about 180 degrees or 170 degrees for about 25 minutes. That's all it takes. And then bring it out and it's bubbly and steaming. And hopefully you've got some little burnt bits around the outside, which are nice and crunchy, which are delicious.
Why? What is it about a lasagna that makes it such a go-to dish?
It's heartwarming. That's what it is. It's heartwarming to make it. I was making a tray with yesterday for Grossi a Casa with a couple of the guys, and I actually said we were making 20 trays actually, but I said there's something about making lasagna. It just makes you feel nice, and eating it's the same thing.
It's so great for me to hear that you're still in there cooking a lasagna with the guys. When you must have so much on your mind and so much to do, so many being pulled in so many different directions. But is it important to you, you know, as the owner of these businesses, that you do still, you know, have your hands in it and you're still like in love with the produce and the food?
It is for me. If I didn't have that outlet, you know, during times like this, I'd be mad. And I also think the guys really appreciate the fact that, you know, there's the care still there and you're still involved and you're still, you know, happy to lift the heavy weights as well. And I think they really respect that. So it's something that I think I will continue to do for as long as I possibly can.
And I just have to pick up one other aspect about the ragu. So I know that, you know, beef or veal and pork is very traditional, in a bolognese, but this chicken, tell me about that.
Well, it's the way my dad taught me to cook it when I was a really young lad. And so I was just done it that way. And it's our family recipe. It does add a certain softness to the sauce as well. And it's hard to describe, but it almost gives it a bit of moisture.
It sounds so good. Well, I reckon if anything's going to get me through this, it's that lasagna. Guy, it's really such a pleasure to talk to you. You know, we are all in this together. We are sick of saying it. And we're also sick of saying we can do this, but I know that we can. And thank you for doing what you're doing to steer the good ship Melbourne through lockdown number 4.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Danny. And it's really nice to talk to you. It really is.
But likewise, take care.
You too. Ciao, ciao.
This is Dirty Linen and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about. We spend a week thrashing around each issue, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you.